There we go.
All right. First of all, welcome everyone to the first meeting of the Budget Committee in the new council year. It's very exciting to be here with all of you today, and I know we're going to embark. I think this year will start kind of an interesting cycle, economic cycle for us, and new challenges ahead, but with challenges come excitement, and so I'm excited to be here with all of you doing that. We have some new members who are joining us, and I thought maybe I could introduce them. First, we have from Los Angeles, Superior Court, Los Angeles County, we have Judge Armendariz, and welcome. Welcome, Judge Armendariz. We're excited to have you. And we also have with us from Orange County, David Yamasaki, their CEO. Mr. Yamasaki and I go way back. Literally, he was the first assistant CEO. I think you were the first one. You were in Vista by the time when I got there, right? Yeah. And so we've known each other since 07, and he brings with him a wealth of experience. And so we're thrilled to have him. And not with us today, but who's joining our committee is Ms. Rachel Hill. She is a state bar appointee. For those of you who know her, she's practices in the Bay Area. She's wonderful. We've all known her from her work on the Judicial Council. And she'll bring kind of an excitement and intelligence and wit to this that I think we're all going to appreciate. So that's great to have her. And I'm sorry she's not with us today, but she'll be with us next time. So that's our new folks. And to the new folks, do you have any questions for us before we start? And so I'm getting a no. So if I were to characterize our committee, I would say it's a lot like having Thanksgiving dinner with my family. Talk loud, talk fast, prepare to defend. So this is not a committee for the faint of heart. We expect everybody to participate. Everybody here does. And so if you have any questions at all, make sure you jump in. If you don't understand something, other people don't either, or other people won't when our time comes to present it. So please ask questions. I hope I'm making you feel comfortable and not nervous. All right. So this meeting is open to the public, and we are recording. The meeting is being conducted virtually. That means that members of the public can watch us via a listen-only video feed. They cannot speak during the meeting. Now, some people, and we had this with Justice Hill just a moment ago, some people are calling in to listen, and that means a couple of things for us. And I guess I'm speaking to the new members, but they know this from other committees they're on. Basically, remain muted unless you're speaking. Make sure you unmute yourself when you are speaking. When you are speaking, because not everybody can see us, some people are just listening, just state your name so they know who you are so they can appreciate all of your pearls of wisdom as you speak. And with that, why don't you go ahead, Ms. Cowan, let's take roll.
Thank you. Judge Rubin.
Here.
Judge Mormon.
Here.
Justice Fujisaki.
Here.
Justice Hill.
Here.
Judge Armendariz.
Here.
Judge Botke.
Here.
Judge Hopp.
Here.
Mr. Yamasaki. Did we lose him?
Dave, did you go? There he is. He's
Mr.
here.
Mr. Yamasaki. Mr. Yamasaki, you're back with us?
Yes, I'm sorry. Technical difficulties, okay. But I'm here. Thank you.
Okay, great. And Ms. Rachel Hill is absent, as you said.
All right, outstanding. So we do have a quorum, so we're going to keep going forward. So I've already mentioned that we've welcomed to the new members. I've met, and as you've noticed, we are now at 9, which I think is appropriate given the importance of this committee and the importance. Clearly, we've been very active this last year. Now that the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee is reporting to us, we have a lot more work. We're doing a lot more. We have a higher presence, I think, at the more, or I should say, more visible presence at the council meeting. So I think having more people is actually good for us as we kind of move through the work, the important work that we're doing. So we already talked about that. Let's go on then to our first business item. Have you all had a chance to look at the August 24, 2022 minutes? They're on page 3 of your materials. Okay, Hal.
Yeah, this is Judge Hopp. I move approval of the minutes.
Thank you. We have a motion by Judge Hopp.
Fujisaki, second.
We have a motion by Justice Fujisaki. We have a second by Justice Fujisaki. So we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstain?
Abstaining. Right. Yamasaki.
Abstain, Armendariz.
Fair enough. We'll go ahead and put Judge Armendariz and Mr. Yamasaki as abstentions. All right, let's talk about public comment. Ms. Cowan, have we received any public comment for our meeting today?
There's no public comment.
That does conclude the public comment portion of this meeting. All right, so today, unusually for us of late, we have, it's not that we have two items, that's not unusual, but we have two information only items. No, we don't have any action items. So our first one, and I'm excited to hear about this one as well as the other one, but we'll start with this. The trial court operational and budgetary metrics. Ms. Leah Rose Goodwin, well known to this committee for outstanding support of us and all the fine work that she does over at OCR, is going to provide us with an update on the discussion with TICPAC and the operational and budgetary metrics included in this year's Budget Act, requiring us to report annually to the legislature on specified items. Ms. Rose Goodwin, you are up.
Thank you, Judge Rubin. I appreciate it. Just confirming that you can see the screen I put up.
Yes, we can.
Yes. Terrific. Okay, so rather than have me recite the wording of the bill, I thought I would put up a couple of slides with the language. So just in summary, Senate Bill 154, the budget bill, is requiring the Judicial Council to report on a series of metrics, and they fall into three categories. They are operational, workload, and budgetary, and I will show them in the various groups here on the subsequent slides. In terms of programmatic metrics, the language states that the Council should report on time to disposition by case type and by court, case clearance rates by case type in court, and backlogs by case type. There's also a series of operational metrics that specify court hours of operation, including public counter hours, staff vacancy rates by classification, and finally a series of financial metrics that include fund balance detail and the calculated funding level of each court. So over the past really, since the onset of the pandemic, there has been a group of CEOs that have been meeting to discuss pandemic-related workload. And that's really when the legislature started to request that the branch report on operational metrics related to the pandemics, and now as we see in this budget language a bit more generally. So at the time, this group of CEOs came together to help us in the branch and the legislature understand those changes in court workload. And that work really formed the basis for the $110 million in funding for trial courts to address workload issues, mainly backlog, during the pandemic. So this small group of CEOs has been continuing to meet nearly monthly to discuss ways to report on these metrics. In doing so, those conversations have been shaped by a series of principles which include things like ease of measurement, items that are within a court's control, increasing public access, and measures that wouldn't be limited or defined by the pandemic. So that group is continuing to refine its discussions and come closer to a set of metrics. At the same time, we have a deadline that's rapidly approaching. The legislation states that we must report by February 1 of each year. So there's really a short lead time to finalize the measures for this year's report. A proposed approach is that we consider some alternative measures, some already reported data for year one, while this small group of CEOs and eventually the Data Analytics Advisory Committee, whose charter includes developing standards and measures of performance, you can have some time to actually work through reporting for the longer term. So we're discussing the possibility of an alternative approach in this first year that would fulfill the reporting requirements, but maybe be a little bit different than the reporting ongoing. So I gave a similar presentation at Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee at their meeting last month. And at that time, there were no comments or questions. I did mention that I would come back to this fall, and I believe that we're going to request time on the Court Executive Advisory Committee agenda in October to further to discuss the approach for year one and further refine this item. Happy to take any questions, Judge Rubin, or members of the committee.
All right, are there questions for Ms. Rose Goodwin? All right, Judge Hopp.
Yeah, is this new data or data that we haven't been collecting or numbers that we haven't been calculating before?
Thank you, Judge Hopp. I should have mentioned that more upfront, but yes, the majority of the measures are reported already. Many of them are reported publicly in our court statistics report. The financial metrics, in fact, things like the workload formula and percent of funding are reported as part of the budget process and are published in public documents. So most of the measures are already available. A couple of them may need a little bit of further refinement. To give a simple example, one of the measures asks for the judicial council or judicial branch to report on the vacancy rates by classification. And certainly we don't take that to mean that the legislature is interested in understanding the vacancy rate for every single one of the classifications in the court. There must be some logical groupings that we can make that would make the data responsive to the request and more understandable. And so it's whether or not we break that data down into managers and supervisors versus line staff, for example, or separate courtroom clerks from other clerks. That's an example of some of the refinements that this group needs to hone in on a little bit. But again, most of the requested data has already been published in some form.
Thank you.
I'm kind of curious, like they're getting, my understanding is like our clearance rates and things like that were kind of relatively new devices that we came up with, but they knew, did we share with them that we had those? How do they know to ask for those specifically? I'm just curious. Not that
so clearance is actually published in our court statistics report. So that one is readily available. The backlog measure might be the one that you might be thinking of, Judge Rubin, because that's not we don't publish a backlog number, but in the course of our conversations during the pandemic, you know, at some point the legislature had wanted to understand what way the pandemic was affecting the courts and asked us to identify ways that we could measure backlog. So at that time, we identified that if we compared clearance rate from a pre-pandemic period of time to a pandemic period of time, that we could establish a good proxy for backlog. And we have published that information and shared it with the legislature at various points in their decision-making. So there is some discussion whether or not those measures of backlog that were established during the pandemic are, quote-unquote, evergreen. Those measures compared a pre-pandemic period of time to a pandemic period of time. And it may be that there could be other measures that would, you know, more accurately or better define backlog on an ongoing non-pandemic basis. But at the same time, this small group of CEOs is also trying to weigh carefully the difficulty or the burden of reporting information. While we could get really specific metrics on specific areas of workload, the reporting burden or the collection of that data may be very costly, maybe more workload than the measures that we already collect as part of our annual statistical reporting. So that's kind of the tenor of the discussions right now, is what type of reporting can we do with data that we already report for other purposes, or what can we access readily across all of our 58 courts?
All right. Other questions? Or Justice Fujisaki.
I'm sorry. Did you say that was an internal branch conversation, or is that discussion also being had with the legislature?
So with regard to the conversation with the legislature, a little bit additional context. During our budget hearings last legislative session, the legislature has some very specific questions concerning operations in the courts. This is revolving around the $100 million ongoing request that the governor had built in. And they were concerned about some of the responses, quite frankly. And in order to try to safeguard these dollars, we met with the legislative consultants and formed an agreement that they would go forward to their respective bosses and have a conversation about those questions that they had, and that we are a transparent branch and that we are open to a reporting. The nuance here is, Leah said, we have a lot of the data. We have it at the macro level, and that's how we've been reporting annually. They are interested, the legislature, in a per court basis reporting, though. And that's the big distinction that this report has, is that it's going to have both from a financial standpoint and from an operational standpoint, a full reporting on the macro and the specific court level. And so that's an important distinction to make. We are planning to have another round of conversations with the legislative consultants, likely in the October time period, to get with them to show them what information we have and how it would be best to array that information to be helpful for them. Certainly, there's a lot of information I think the branch will be utilizing in conversations internally here. So, ongoing discussion with the ledge consultants about kind of where we're heading, what information we have at this point, and kind of long-term where we want to head with them, understanding that it is a partnership with them. It was a part of the budget agreement that we have with them to secure that ongoing funding.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. More questions, either for Mr. Wardlaw or Ms. Rose Goodwin. All right. How about some of our new members? Mr. Yamasaki, Judge Armendariz, any questions? Want to encourage you to get out there.
Yeah, if I could, Judge Rubin, one of the things that I think is going to be important, and certainly I recognize the obligation that we have to report information, but in some of the instances, just taking a look at the snapshot that was provided, I think there's going to be a need to incorporate or allow courts to add some clarity. As an example, delays, a time from filing to disposition is not always at the hands of the court. There are local variables, local legal cultures that may influence, whatever delays may be experienced, the pandemic, et cetera. So I think, including some information about like a narrative explaining some of the components is going to be very important, because you're going to see different experiences in different courts. And I don't want anybody to walk away thinking that, you know, a quarter is underperforming or overperforming or what have you. So I think making sure there's an opportunity to provide more information is going to be very important. The other issue is vacancies. Vacancies mean something, could mean something different in different courts. 10% versus 6% may not be reflective of the challenges that a rural court may have in trying to backfill some of the positions. So I think it's important for courts to be able to provide some clarity in some of that information, because what we don't want to have is folks in Sacramento getting the wrong understanding of what's happening at a particular court. So that more information that can clarify some of those things, I think, would be very important.
Thank you, Mr. Yamasaki. And I think I agree. Judge Armendariz, anything?
No, I have no questions.
Okay. All right, any more questions for Ms. Rose Goodwin? All right, Ms. Rose Goodwin, any closing statement or final words for us as we start our new year?
I know, other than, you know, I think there will be, there's, you know, continuous work on this. I'm sure there will be another opportunity to, you know, to check in with this committee on this issue. And I appreciate that time and thanks for the comments. Always helpful to hear from this group. Thank you.
Yeah, and we love hearing back from you on anything. So thank you.
Judge Rubin, if I can just add that as we have these conversations with our legislative partners, we do recognize that it's important. You have our commitment that the court voice needs to be at the table, directly the court leadership. And so we will extend an invite to the TCPJAC and SEAC chair be there with us as we're engaging and can have that voice.
Thank you for that commitment. And thank you all and both of you, the whole staff, for coming to us and having an interactive experience around some of this. To Mr. Yamasaki's point, I was just thinking, it's interesting that he brought up, you know, the different types of delays. And for instance, in our county, probably not related, but kind of illustrates the point. They used to be called 1170.95 petitions. I can't remember what they're called anymore, but what's their new number? Whatever their new number is, there's only like three or four lawyers that handle them in our county by agreement. And so what happens is you one's assigned to your department, but the lawyers tell you where you are in the lineup. And so what should take maybe 60 days, they've got so many other petitions in front of you, you're just going to go, you're in line, and it could look like a delay caused by whatever, but it's actually not. It's a delay caused by the way our county happens to want to handle, the public defender and the DA want to handle them. And we've all just kind of decided to go along with it. So anyway, things like that are helpful to have these continued conversations just to get little nuances. Not to say the legislature needs to hear every single little nuance, just you'll hear them and figure out what can be transmitted in a way that's coherent. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Ms. Rose Goodwin. That's a tough act to follow, but Ms. Allen is up to it. So our second item is a trial court executive summary displays. Ms. Allen is here to provide an informational overview on the 22-23 court executive summary. And you'll know, you probably got two sets of minutes or two sets of agenda on this. And one had Judge Conklin and Ms. Tuck on it. Neither of them are available today. So Ms. Allen has bravely stepped in to help us out here. And so let's go ahead and turn it over to her. Ms. Allen, you're up.
Thank you. Good afternoon. So I'm gonna cover this informational item on the trial court executive summary. So this summary is developed every year. Each fiscal year, it provides an annual and directed judicial council budget services on presentation of trial court funding. It represents changes and comparisons from a prior year to a current year and any relevant statewide perspectives. So in July, at the July 18th, the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee meeting, they reviewed a single court executive summary from the 21-22 fiscal year, and they asked the budget services staff to come back to them with a updated 2022-23 executive summary. We maintained the same display, the current format, but we included updated allocation information for the committee's consideration. So we went back to them in September at their September 8th meeting and reviewed the 2022 executive summary. It included new funding, such as the Consumer Price Index, equity funding, new judgeship funding, and that version was approved by the budget committee, the advisory budget committee, on September 8th. And the approved trial court executive summary is on page 7 of your material, so you can see how it lay out. It is an example of one single court executive summary. We will be distributing that to all 58 trial courts no later than October 2022. And then in the spring of 2023, we will be resending out new updated executive summaries when all of the 2022-23 allocations are final. And if you have any questions, we're happy to field them.
All right. Outstanding. And great work on the display. I don't know that I'd seen one before, but that was really good work. Any questions for Ms. Allen? Anybody? Bueller. Well, Ms. Allen, that reference is way too old for anybody in the room. I think one person got it. Thank you, Justice Fujisaki.
Okay.
But thank you, Ms. Allen, for that great presentation. I guess I had a question. Maybe it's for Mr. Yamasaki more than you right now. When the CEOs look at that, is that display super easy to grab in terms of what it's saying and whatnot?
Yeah, one of the good things is there's some consistency in the type of information that's being displayed. So everybody's pretty familiar with that, and the information is not difficult to put together. Sometimes it might need a little bit of explaining, some nuances that are in place locally. But it's not overly burdensome at all. But thanks for asking.
Yeah, I was just curious.
And if I might add, Judge, part of this is to give, as David said, all courts the opportunity to see some things summarized from the court that they could use for their bench. But I know I'm certain that David has his own version of a budget sort of overview. But there are courts, I think, that is a great service for us. And again, everybody has the same, but it can be tweaked if they need it. But sometimes those smaller to medium-sized courts who may not have staff to always pull things together, they can have something. And then as judges talk about them, you know, their operations with one another, they have common information. So I think it's been a good document. And that's why we like to bring it back, because it's the living, breathing thing that we don't want it to be stagnant. And so the input at the committee level is important as well.
All right. And Justice Fujisaki.
Yeah, so that was kind of my question, is that, to me, it looks like a very comprehensive chart, but are there things that are not on it that, I'm sure you solicit input from the trial courts as to kind of what types of information, what other information might be useful to them?
They had no changes this year, Justice Fujisaki, but they definitely get it and are asked for input more than happy to make necessary adjustments.
Yeah, so David, I'm just curious, when you look at this, is there anything on here that...
Maybe to answer that question, I can recall back to a version that we did provide. And one of the things that was reported several years back was, what are the local challenges? What's the local backlog, and what are you going to do with the money if you receive something in self-help or what have you? And I think since all of us have been so fortunate to see some the infusion of new money, we've been making pretty significant progress in achieving some of the goals. Going back to something that Judge Rubin did mention, is it difficult to put together some of the information? I don't think so. I think everybody's been doing it for, you know, sequential years. It should be pretty simple. But as I mentioned before in the reporting, an opportunity to make notations might give a local flavor to the information that's reported. Kind of a catch-all opportunity on the bottom, provide a little bit of a narrative, would probably cover that issue, but it's a very good point. We did do it at one point in time, and that might be helpful.
Thank you. Judge Hoff.
I really ought to position a mouse to unmute myself before I raise my hand. So this isn't about this, it's more of an overall question, and maybe better directed to Vlatko or John. I notice on the percentage of workload formula funded that this shows that this particular county is funded in the current year at 99.7%, statewide average 92%. I thought that with the funding for underfunded courts and everything else, that we had gotten that band down to like 3 or 4% maybe between the least funded and the highest funded. So how is it that this court seems to be several percentage points above the statewide average? And maybe I'm missing something, which I probably am.
In short, Judge Hobb, the focus was getting the lowest funded courts as close to the statewide average as possible. There are going to be circumstances, and a lot of this are the smaller and medium-sized courts, where they are on the higher end of that average. But the goal of equity was, we didn't want courts at the 70% range and courts at 100% and the average being in the 80s and having that significant gap. So, you know, if a court is closer to the 100%, that's okay. But that equity was really focused on bringing those lowest funded courts as close to the statewide average as possible. And that gap is a couple of percents. I think it's almost about a percent and a half. But there will be courts that are above it, and that's part of that. For example, the cluster one courts, the policy of the branch is that they're funded at 100% given their size. And so that's already going to have folks there.
Right. But what I guess I have two questions based on what Judge Hodges just asked. So Alameda, if this, I'm taking this document as in final, it's not a draft. It's not like, I'm taking all the data in it is not just put there, it's real. So Alameda is basically 100% funded. And so technically all their budget needs are being met, all of them are being met this year. They don't have any excuse for not paying for something. Is that what I get from that? And does this fluctuate year to year? Like in other words, can next year they be dropped to 92% or something like that? Is that possible?
I know David is looking to just maybe speak on the operational aspects of the budget. Maybe I'll just speak to the latter portion of the question, which is, yes, the percentages can change because there are moving factors. It varies based on how work the filings by court might change, what their local costs are. But yeah, it can vary. The cost of doing business will grow, and therefore, if there's not, you know, any growth in the funding, then there'll be an erosion of that. But yeah, if filings go up or go down, that can change how much work you have, and therefore, how much money you need to meet that need. But in terms of the first question, I see David poised and ready to respond. I think it might be more appropriate to have a court executive talk about what it means to be funded at that level and how does it address costs.
Yeah, so two points I would say is you're absolutely right. As Lako mentioned, workload funding is what drives how much a court receives, and it's based on a three-year average of filings. And one of the reasons why we built that mechanism in as part of TICBAC was to make sure that if there was a huge drop a particular year, that didn't necessitate a immediate drop in the funding because we needed to even things out. There could have been some anomaly that existed in a particular court, perhaps a prosecuting agency's philosophy and filing. And so we want to make sure we we maintain some stability in that. So it can go down. The other thing is, because we are moving in the direction of an indexed increase for courts, if a court is funded, let's say, at 100%, and the following year, because they're funded at 100% this year, the decision is not to give them any more money, recognize that costs go up every year for courts. So if costs go up 2% and this year is 100%, then they will be funded at 98%. So we have to obviously recognize that there are cost increases that a court incurs from year to year. And while the objective isn't to push everybody down at the very top, the objective, I think, has been to bring everybody closer to the 100%. And that is what has happened year after year as a result of this new funding methodology, is what we're trying to do is bring the average up. That's what's done beautifully this year as a result of the, you know, strong advocacy that had been done at the Capitol. And so what we're doing right now is bringing everybody closer to the top, as opposed to implementing, you know, mechanisms to adjust courts lower. We've already built in a mechanism in the funding methodology that if your funding is in excess of 100% by a certain percentage, and you have a flat funding year, then there are tools in place to make sure that you don't exceed a certain amount as well. So I think, you know, over the next few years, this is something to, you know, closely monitor. But the objective I think we should continue to strive for is boosting everybody to that 100% mark, as long as the funding is coming in that way, in a positive way. Hopefully that was helpful.
Yeah, it's a huge amount of pressure on us. I mean, if we're going public saying we're 100% funded in areas, then we have no reason not to be performing at the top of our game, especially with filings off 45% in 10 years. But good news for now. More questions for Ms. Allen, or let's rope in Mr. Yamasaki on this one along with Mr. Wardlaw. Any questions? I don't see any. Ms. Allen, you were sensational. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Good job. Thank you. All right. So that takes care of our second informational item. Let's talk about, before we adjourn into closed session, let's talk about our next public meeting. Now, our next public meeting was, as you probably know, if you probably penciled it in already, for November 16th. I want to say two things. One is, as you also heard yesterday at the council meeting, our November meeting has been moved to the beginning of December. So our meeting will move along with it. Now, something to consider, and I don't know how practical it is, but Judge Botke is with me on litigation. And what we have done is moved to a slightly different model, which we think helps the staff during the regular meetings. And it also just helps us with our workload, which is, as things come up, we convene meetings to take care of cases as they come in the door that need attention, versus waiting for a meeting to you know, at a council meeting and then meeting and doing, say, 5 or 8 at once or something. I don't know that we can do that with budget, but maybe thinking about moving to a model that at least exploits our ability to meet virtually and take care of things that need to be taken care of more quickly, all of us together. All by way of saying it that that we might need that we'll see how these meetings develop as the future is now upon us. I think also as a council we should be modeling the behaviors we want to see in the courts, which are to exploit our ability to do remote proceedings and how effective they are. And look, we're using it to dispatch business. So that's one item. So just kind of put that in the back, and we'll come back to you with the new date. We may be holding on, though, to the November date if we need to get a report to the council and therefore to the legislature timely. So just hang tight. We may have two dates coming up, not just one. All right. With that, so that's kind of my bit on calendaring. Is there any good of the order matters? Anything for the good of the order? No? All right. Well, I wanted to welcome and thank Judge Armendariz, Mr. Yamasaki, Ms. Hill in absentia for being with us. And now we are going to adjourning, and let us go into closed session.